The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The guy from Ballinrobe came down and sat beside me. He said, I'd take the draw and I said I'd go home. I said, no. I said, this is the time. I said, if we're going to do it, now is the time. And you can sense
download
it.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, very welcome along to this week's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour of the show, where every week we pick through every single Premier League fixture. Maybe we ignore some of the crappy ones, don't worry. And advise you on what makes some sense, what might not make some sense, and where you should be staying away from it. So what to watch and why, and hopefully over the course of the week and over the course of the year, we might help you towards some profit. Joining us from his YouTube lair is Enda Call. Enda, how are you?
Jer, how are you?
The reason I know you're in your YouTube lair this week is because the last wagon wheel has been sitting in the kitchen uneaten, unmolested, for about an hour and a half now, and that would not be the case if you were in the office.
It would not. It's the king of all the biscuits that we get for free on a Friday in the office. It's a little trick of the trade, and I usually take about three or four of them with me and stick them in my bag for later on in the week as well.
Oh, right. Okay, it's all coming out tonight. This week's Stats Man, odds compiler from Paddy Powers, Emmett O'Keefe. Emmett, how are you?
Not bad, Jer. Looking forward to the weekend's football and, for my dad's sake, hoping for a Cork upset in the hurling.
All right. Okay, I didn't realise you had Cork blood in you. I mean, you've managed to suppress it. The gene is recessive in your case.
Yeah, no, it's, hopefully you'll see a bit more of the chippiness come out as the podcast goes on.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. With the return of the Paddy Power Half Hour, it also means return to our near-miss section, which, if you're new to the show, works as follows. If you have an accumulator bet with Paddy Power and it's let down by an offside goal or a dodgy penalty, or maybe a Stonewall penalty isn't given because of the new rules, or maybe a goal gets allowed that shouldn't have been allowed, make sure you include the bet ID, take a screen grab of it, send it to us on Twitter or WhatsApp or Instagram, and our own very dodgy goals commission will make a decision on whether or not to give you your full winnings or refund your stake. So your bet might not be a loser even though you are. Did I say that right? Anyway, I'm joking. Your bet might not be a loser if you only get let down in one leg of it, and you send it to us and our Dodgy Goals Commission will sit in judgment with it. Send it with the hashtag PPNearMiss and you could get lucky, and we'll play you the video of the guy who won 11 grand at the end of the show. But Emmett, this worked out really well for us last year. Some people were particularly happy with how it worked out.
Absolutely, Jerry. I think as well, like anyone who's gambled any occasion knows, the most painful defeats are, say, if you've a 10 euro six leg accumulator and it's win, and you're five legs of one, your six leg is winning 2-1, and then the team equalise the last minute to lose your money. That's the worst feeling in gambling, and we're looking to kind of alleviate those worst feelings and turn those worst feelings into a positive. So if that happens to you, if you have a very painful defeat, please send us in your bet receipt. We are actively looking to pay out and save your pain.
The hashtag is PP Near Miss, and get it on to us on any of our platforms. We'll dig it out and we'll have it, and hopefully you can come on the show and we might pay out. We'll see exactly how it goes. Enda, you weren't with us last week, so you missed some of the outrageous opportunities that you have taken in the past to make predictions. Is there anything, you know, anything specific that you're thinking, just can't wait to go and tell the whole country about my particular football brain?
Well, it's an interesting season, Jer, because obviously you have four sides probably fighting for the title, maybe five sides, particularly if you count Leicester. It's a very heavy top four, top five of the Premier League this year. Like, if you think about Chelsea's side, they've got one of the best teams in the league. Man City, if they add Harry Kane to the mix, I mean, who's going to stop them? Manchester United finally getting into grips with Varane and Sancho coming into the team. And Liverpool back with Virgil van Dijk. So the top four is very strong. But one thing about this year, and I've sort of alluded to this, people don't really go with it, but the bottom half of the Premier League season table this year is extremely bad. I mean, we're looking at a top five, very strong top five, probably the strongest it's ever been. But then when you go down the pecking order, there's far more bad teams in the Premier League this year, okay, than I think there's ever been.
Hang on, so I'm just going to talk through this graphic. We'll leave it up for a second. So you've made tiers. You've got good, decent, meh, bad. And I don't know what the green D one at the bottom is, but the bad, worse than bad. So maybe that's relegated. In the bad tier, you've got some teams that are going to be pretty peeved with the fact that you've put them there. So Palace, Newcastle, Wolves, Southampton, Watford, Norwich, Everton. Who's that crest beside Everton? Brighton, Arsenal. And what's the one of them? Is it?
It's Norwich, isn't it?
No, you've got Norwich beside Everton. To the left of it, Camera left.
Burnley.
And above them in the meh, it's Brentford. And then you've got decent Spurs, West Ham, Villa and Leeds. I think Villa might not be decent just yet. I'm a bit concerned. Not going to lie. Bit concerned about what happened last week.
I was stuck between putting them in decent or putting them in meh. I decided to put them in decent just in case because I'm a big fan of Buendia, a big fan of Danny Ings. So I think the two of them can actually bring something to the table this year. But I don't think it's controversial to have, I'd say, Arsenal and Everton there. I think the reason I have them there is that people talk about them as potential European sides, and they're just not at this stage. They're mid-table sides. They haven't pushed on to European spots in the last couple of years. And then you're just looking at it's such a depressing. Who's going to sit down and watch any of those teams if they are playing against each other? I just don't see it. Maybe that's top tier snobbery.
It is.
I don't get why people would sit down and watch Brighton take on Burnley.
I mean, okay.
Unless they're from there.
Emmett, is the Premier League as anchored by crap teams as Enda says?
I think probably Enda's being a little harsh in the middle class. I think, particularly Arsenal. Obviously, they were terrible last week, and the typical Arsenal, all that narrative is being wheeled out. But I think just the Premier League clubs just have way more money than the rest of Europe. Like, if you look at the money, Arsenal aren't spending money wisely, but they are spending money. And if you just compare that, their transfer fees they're spending to what the rest of Europe are spending, it's not comparable. And I think the thing about the Premier League clubs and those middle tier clubs, if they do spend money wisely, like we've seen with Leicester, they can rise up. They have the resource at their disposal. So I think maybe a little bit harsh.
And I'd say you would have had Leicester in that meh or bad tier, and actually it was just top tier snobbery as you have self-diagnosed.
Well, here's the thing, though, because, listen, the reason I have them all as bad sides is because if you look at the Premier League table from last year, the gap between the ninth best team to the bottom team is not that actually high. Arsenal snuck in to the eighth place finish last year just out of sheer luck in the end. Leeds were unlucky not to finish in the top eight last year. The gap is narrowing between the bottom team and the 10th best team. But that doesn't necessarily mean the 10th best team is a good team. That just means the gap is getting smaller because the money is there is less of an issue when it comes to the mid-table side. So I wouldn't call the sides that are finished 10th a good side. I wouldn't call the mid-table sides good sides anymore. They're not. They're the same level as a potential relegation side. So I don't think that's a good side. And take Arsenal for the prime example. We did a flash poll on our Twitter before this show went live. Are Arsenal now a mid-table side? 75% of people think that Arsenal are a mid-table side.
So you trolled Arsenal fans, and everybody gleefully piled in on Twitter, and this is your empirical evidence that your theory is somehow correct.
Excellent.
Good work, Enda. That thing that you wanted to be true, you manufactured a way to make it true, and so therefore it is true. I like it. You've been watching the political discourse around the world for the last couple of years, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to have a bit of that.
It's not what is true necessarily, Jared. It's what you can prove to be true, and I've got the facts to back it up.
I think my point is that my only point on this is really that the lesser teams in the Premier League have been able to invest in top quality players, and that there are fewer and fewer of the teams who don't have some really excellent players who are playing for them. And you know, I think even Crystal Palace have Zaha, and unfortunately they would have been sensational this year to watch but for an Achilles injury. And I think that even the worst teams have something about them. Like, I'm very interested to see what happens with Norwich this year from an Ireland perspective. As soon as Delhi gets back in the team, going to be very interested in that, and I hope it happens sooner rather than later. You know, I don't think anybody particularly enjoys watching Burnley play football too much, but as a thought experiment and what they have managed to do, that's not a bad story. After that, like, Brighton not create a lot of chances last year? Were they not a really excellent footballing team?
No, they were above the relegation zone for the last 3 weeks.
No. Your scoreboard journalism. I'm saying is, on a match to match basis, were they not also involved in some of the most exciting fixtures last year? Were they were the ones who were, you know, on the verge of beating or drawing against the top tier teams, and then only for bad penalties to be given away? I mean, you're nodding away here. You know more about this than I do. Back me up.
I know. I tend to agree with you. I think on Brighton in particular, I think firstly, just to go at your point about Zaha, I think that is the big thing. If you're a Premier League fan of a smaller club compared to say a Real Sociedad fan in Spain, if your player has a really good season in Spain, he's gone. Yeah, same in Germany, it's the similar thing. Those clubs cannot hold on to those players. The instances of Jamie Vardy staying at a club like Leicester for years does not happen in Spain or Germany. The instances of Zaha staying at Palace does not happen in Spain or Germany. So I think if you're a fan of a smaller club, if you're buying a season ticket, at least you can look forward to having a really good player on your team. And just on Brighton, they're kind of a point of contention on the show, but I do think. I think we'd hopefully see some regression to the mean there, and hopefully they'll be a little bit more lucky this season. I think they're definitely, I think, a level above teams like Burnley.
You should go and spend a weekend in Brighton, and you would love it, and you will come back completely converted to the football, the people, the way of life, the salty sea air.
Mm. See, here's the thing. I'm a big fan of people who choose to support these sides because, I mean, it is a different culture to supporting a team like Manchester United who have a global fan base. But and I've no doubt that Brighton is a great city. I hear that is a great city to go out in. But anyway, that's a side note. If anybody's watching this show and they've watched it last year, I am not going to sit here all year round again and listen to us talk about Brighton's XG and how good Brighton are and how many chances they're creating, because it's not going to float my boat this year at all. So we'll leave Brighton, we'll park Brighton, and maybe Norwich, who I do think are a good side, but I would describe them as nice in a bad way and a good way.
And if that's the worst that you're saying about a team in the Premier League, I think it's really interesting to me how so many people who spend a lot of time thinking and watching the Premier League dump on it as often and as heavily as they can. It's a really weird dynamic just think about that for a second. It's like, this thing, I really hate these teams and I can't wait to trash it, and it's like, I can't, I have to watch it, I need it. It's a very interesting little part of our world and culture that goes on. Let's get into the games, because we obviously have the whole year to wind end up about Brighton's XG. They scored twice last week, by the way. Liverpool Burnley, 12:30 Saturday. Aston Villa against Newcastle, Palace Brentford, Leeds against Everton, Man City against Norwich are the 3:00 Saturday kickoffs. Oh, how we've missed the Saturday 3:00 kickoffs. Brighton against Watford at 5:30 on Sunday. It's Southampton against Man United, that's at 2:00. Wolves against Spurs at 2:00, and at 4:30 it's Arsenal against Chelsea, and West Ham and Leicester play in the first Monday night fixture of the new season. So West Ham Leicester kicks off on Monday night at 8:00. Let's get into these then. And the Liverpool against Burnley kicks off at 12:00, and on your poll, 90% think it's going to be a victory for Liverpool, 10% think it's going to be a victory for Burnley. And are they 9-1 on? Are Burnley bigger than 9-1 to win this game? Those odds are about what I would expect.
Yeah, so Liverpool are 1-6, and the draw draw 6-1, and Burnley 40-1. Just a quick plug here that since the Euros, we've added assists to our bet builder. So, for example, for this game, if you wanted to back Trent Alexander-Arnold to have an assist, Liverpool to win, and Mo Salah to score, if you go onto the bet builder tab on the Paddy Power website, we'll give you a combined price for that. And actually, a player who I think looks a decent price in that market is Tsimikas, Liverpool's Greek fullback. Just, he's taking Liverpool's set pieces from the left hand side. He had quite good assist numbers in Greece, and I think this is an ideal game for him to get forward and get plenty of chances to get crosses in with Burnley sitting back.
Okay. Do you have any information about 12:00 kickoffs? I mean, I should have told you about this. It's this kind of random thing in my head where the 12:00 kickoffs don't always go the way you expect. Weird things happen in them.
Yeah, it's probably something I need to have a look at. I know in the NFL in years past, it would be priced in that a team, say, traveling from West Coast to East Coast, and they'd be playing at 1 p.m. East Coast time, which might be 9:30 a.m. West Coast time. So then the players might struggle with their body clocks, playing at 9:30 a.m. their equivalent. So it can be an issue in American sport. But I probably have to do a bit more digging to see if it's an issue here.
Okay, and what have you got for us? Do you think Liverpool are back? Oh, can you hear me, Enda? Enda's gone.
No, I'm froze.
No, you're back now. We can see you. You look great. There you go. We'll call him back. Do you think, I'm going to pass that one to you, Emmett, do you think Liverpool are back on the basis of what we saw last week?
Need more evidence. So I'd say this, and like, just I think Norwich are one of the worst teams in the league. But I think it's whenever if Virgil van Dijk is fit and playing, I think this Liverpool team will be very, very competitive. And just I think that's nearly the most important. He came through the game fairly unscathed and looked in good touch.
Okay, and we've obviously been talking a good bit across all our channels about the fact the African Nations Cup is going to have a huge influence on the player availability over the course of this season. Mo Salah was excellent last week. Diogo Jota was back fit and playing well and scoring, and so maybe they'll be able to sustain the loss of Mo Salah and his goals for a period of time and come out the other side of it still competitive, but we'll see. The second fixture on our list today is Aston Villa against Newcastle. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. Villa lost, it was finished 3-2, but they were lucky to only lose by a goal. 81% think Villa are going to beat Newcastle. That's not what happens in real life. Newcastle tend to give it all day long and twice on Saturdays to Villa in recent years. Certainly that's my memory of it. What do you think is going to happen here, Emmett?
Yeah, I'd share your kind of reluctance to in terms of having confidence in Villa. Yeah, Villa 3-4 here, so just over 8-11. The draw 11-4, and Newcastle 10-3. Yeah, like Villa were terrible last week. They didn't have their first shot on target until the 70th minute, which is unacceptable. Like against the team of Watford's level, it looks like Ollie Watkins probably won't be back for this week, which isn't ideal. And you'd hope, from Villa fans' point of view, that Ashley Young doesn't get the start. Playing wide midfield, I think his days of being a attacking winger are certainly past. And just another worry for Villa, just for this game specifically, they struggled with Watford on the counter attack with the pace of Emmanuel Denis and Ismaïla Sarr, and Newcastle would carry a similar threat with Alan Saint-Maximin and Callum Wilson. And Saint-Maximin in particular looks like a player who could be pushing for a move to a bigger club at the end of the season.
Yeah, or in the next week. Like if you had the money and you wanted to. It's Mike Ashley, after all, you know, you get him at the right time of the afternoon and it's like, yeah, I'll take that money, no problems. I think this game could be high scoring. That would be my instinct here. Villa's defence hasn't quite settled down. Villa's central defensive midfield, I'm not sure that Luis is going to play the full game and is not a bit exhausted after his exploits. So I think this could be a high scoring, maybe over totals goals kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I share that sentiment. My only kind of concern is just with when you have two teams who are beaten four the previous week and the other conceding three. I think just hopefully doesn't. I could see maybe Newcastle going defensive here, but just if both teams play like they played last week, we should be in for a high scoring siding game here.
Here's the thing. I think if Newcastle go defensive, Villa will be pretty happy about that because turns out they're not great at that. Crystal Palace against Brentford is the 3 o'clock kickoff. I think this might have been one of those fixtures that Enda had in his mind when he was saying who's going to be watching this, but I still think Brentford are going to be pretty interesting to watch this year. The fact that they're such an experiment in all sorts of different ways. Vieira 38%, Frank 62% is what our audience says. So our audience thinks Brentford should be favourites for this game. I think our audience is right, Emmett.
Yeah, this is actually very interesting. It's not the most interesting game, but just the pricing of it is a little bit interesting. So Palace are 8-5, the draw 2-1, and Brentford are 9-5. So we would have put the prices for this game maybe a week before the start of the season, and we would have opened up Palace would have been 11-10, and so like there's been a huge move from 11-10 out to 8-5 here. And just kind of a small thing as well, if you're ever looking at the prices for Premier League matches, now that we have fans back, if a team is rated equally by the betting markets, the home team would be usually about 11-8, with home advantage worth about 0.3 of a goal. Hopefully people's eyes aren't glazing over here, but just my point here is that Palace are 8-5 Palace means that Brentford are rated as the better team, with Palace only slight favourites because of home advantage. And so there's been a huge move in the market away from Palace and towards Brentford. In those instances, my intuition would usually be kind of oppose Brentford, but I'm not sure Palace are a decent team.
Why would your intuition is to go against the market?
Yeah, or just if it's been a big swing in the market based on only one week's evidence, based only on a small sample size, my intuition would be to go against that. But in this instance, I'm not sure if Palace are a decent team at all. So I'd be prepared to watch this game and see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't ask you to give us the sack race odds this week, but like Vieira after that opening week, you can see how It might be a race between Vieira and Arteta, an Arsenal-themed central midfield thing. So Enda was almost there for a second. He's gone again. Leeds United against Everton, 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Leeds hammered by Manchester United last weekend, but our audience on Instagram, 58% say Leeds are going to win, 42% say Everton are going to win. Everton came from behind to beat Southampton last weekend. There was like a good atmosphere. The fans are certainly giving an opportunity to Rafa to get a hold of the team. He's very quickly come in and burned out some of those the fancy dans, as you would have talked about or thought about them. And I don't know, I think this is going to be a good season for Rafa. I'm buying Rafa at the moment, and you know, the difficult second album from Leeds, maybe we're going to see a few weeks of that, certainly until everybody gets fully fit and up to speed again. And you know, Bamford missed a lot of chances last year. Is he going to score as many as he did? I don't know. You were back at Bamford at high odds, so maybe this is why we have markets, Emmett.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully Bamford picks it up from last week anyway. So yeah, Leeds are 13-10, the draw 12-5, and Everton 2-1. Just worth noting with Leeds, I think, is the Calvin Phillips factor. He didn't play last week, and going back to last season, in the matches he hasn't played, Leeds have taken 9 points from 11 games, an average of 0.8 points a game, and they've lost 8 of those 11 matches. When he has played, they're averaging 1.78 points per game in over 28 matches. That's Europa League form. I'm not saying that those numbers might be a bit skewed and there's like level of opposition you're playing in each match, but I think it does, and I think even if Phillips had played last week, you know, I'd probably still have won. But I think it does illustrate how important Phillips is, and like the likes of Robin Koch replacing him are nearly the same level, because Bielsa asks so much from Phillips, because the way Leeds commit so many numbers forward, they're asking Phillips to put out the fires and stop those counterattacks, which is not easy.
Okay.
I think Leeds will be much improved this week with Phillips back.
Enda, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with Emmett there. I think a couple of Arsenal fans might have gotten into my internet there because I just dropped off for a while. But Leeds, yeah, listen, I think it's not a fair reflection on Leeds last week, that result against United, because I think United are sort of their, you know, the anti-Leeds, the way that they play. They just carve them up in every time. So I think Leeds will be fine. I don't think it'll be as strong as a season. I think maybe they'll drop down to 10th, maybe 11th. But I definitely don't see it being a Sheffield United situation where they just capitulate altogether. In terms of Everton, I mean, I just don't understand the strategy behind Everton and what kind of player they scout. They seem to always go for the most you know, flashy, unbelievable at times players that only perform 8 times out of the season. So if you look at their transfer record over the last couple of years, you know, you like Iwobi coming in, and then Richarlison, I think it's a bit harsh saying it about him because he is actually genuinely a really good player, but you know, Theo Walcott back in the day, these type of players that Everton are bringing in, and they're doing the same this year, and I just don't understand why. Yeah. They bought someone in particular. I can't remember who it was, but he fits the exact same mold as that I'm trying to perceive here. So I think Everton will struggle.
Damari Gray.
Damari Gray. Exactly.
But he was a million and a half. It was a really good bit of business. No.
He wasn't. He'll play well for 7 games of the season, and then he'll just drop off and
totally
go away.
Fine. What Rafa's doing is getting bodies in to make sure that he has flexibility. I think Rafa's a good manager. You're saying Everton are a bad team. They're in your list of bad teams. Where are they going to finish, Enda? This is your prediction that we're going to play at the end of the year. When Everton finish 8th, you're going to be covered, face covered in egg. So tell me, 14th?
Everton will comfortably finish 11th. Comfortably.
So you're saying bottom half of the table?
Yeah, I just think with Everton, who want to progress to be the Tottenham or the Leicesters who break into the top 6, they're buying players who are inconsistent throughout the season, and then they're questioning why they're inconsistent. So Everton are the ultimate team. Every week. Anybody who does any sort of betting at all will know, avoid Everton like the plague, because they will be amazing one week and absolutely horrendous the next week. They're incredibly tough to judge on what they're going to turn up every week. So I think comfortably an 11th place side, if not 10th, maybe.
I think last season they had a manager who was like, definitely had his eye on a better gig somewhere and was happy to have the highlights reel show week on, week off. Look at the football I'm capable of getting. Now they have a manager who's absolutely committed to it. It's very close to where the family lives. Rafa's not going anywhere. He needs this to work. It's one of his last high profile jobs. And I think they're going to have consistency. It might take them a little while to get it, but the second half of the season, I think they're going to have a very strong second half of the season. And I'm very interested to see what they do in the rest of this transfer window and in the next one, because no doubt there's going to be quite a turnover there. So I'm back at Everton to finish in the top 10. You say their bottom half. And we will see at the end of the season. Manchester City against Norwich, the last 3 o'clock kickoff we have to talk about here. 90% think Pep is going to right the wrongs of last week. You can never ask for a better get right match than Norwich at home when there's just a little bit of crisis around you. So if they don't beat them 4 or 5 this week, Emmett, it's a bit of a disaster.
100%, yeah. Like it's the odds here, Man City 1-12, the draw 9-1, and Norwich are 25-20. I don't have much to say here. Like I think Kyle Walker, John Stones, De Bruyne come back in, and City win by possibly a tennis score.
25-1. I don't remember a Premier League game with somebody being 25-1 before.
Mm. Yeah, like I think Norwich when they played City a couple of years ago would have been a similar price, but yeah, it would certainly be as big as we've seen.
Right, that's mad. Do you have anything to say, Ender, or we fly through?
We can fly through. I just do want to say this part of the season throws up loads of my theories, so this is why I'm throwing this here in. I don't think there's been a side like Norwich that you could describe both as nice in such a horrific way, because they're so nice that you can bully them, but they're also very nice to watch, because they're nice in a good way. They're nice in a good way, nice in a bad way, but they're just, again, like you said, flat track bullies. If you get Norwich, it's the perfect way to get your season going, because you know you'll beat them by at least 3 goals.
Okay. Brighton against Watford, 5:30. This is one of Enda's standout fixtures. When the fixture list gets announced, he puts a big red mark around this one. Brighton 62%, Watford 38%. I don't think Watford are going to be crap. I think Watford are going to be reasonable this year, and I think that Watford are going to cause trouble, but I do think Brighton are going to win this game. Emmett, again, I don't have too much to say about this.
No. Brighton are 7-10, the draw 12-5, Watford 9-2. Yeah, just the only thing about Watford I'd say to watch is I think if there's any chance of having survival, is Maile Sarr will have to emerge. I think as a player playing for Europe's top clubs, Listers might remember his 2-goal performance against Liverpool a couple of seasons ago, which stopped the unbeaten run. And I think just if you look at the Transfermarkt website, which is an excellent website, they have the transfer value for each player. He's worth twice as much as Watford's second most expensive player. I think that's an indication. Just he's a level above Watford, and they'll need him to perform like that.
Okay. One question about this. Celtic obviously ruined Shane Duffy, and now he's back, which suggests that there's something toxic in the air around Parkhead. And what is it?
I would have suggested that exact toxic element of Celtic is actually not part of Celtic anymore. So, and I'm not saying that with Shane Duffy, absolutely not. I'm just saying there are plenty of players at Parkhead right now that are performing absolutely phenomenally well that were playing terrible last year. And the correlation is too much of, it's too obvious for me to point it out and name the man who I think was responsible for it all.
All right, let's move on. Southampton against Manchester United, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Southampton obviously beaten by Everton last week. Man United hammered Leeds 5-1. 17% think Ralph Hasenhüttl can win this game. 83% think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Let's see Man United back it up. Can they do it on a fairly easy Sunday afternoon on the south coast? I suspect they can, Emmett.
Yeah, so Southampton are 4-1 here, the draw 3-1, and United 4-7. I think just on Southampton, going what we said last week about them being kind of relegation candidates, they delivered, I think, one of the most concerning performances, being like they're well beaten by an Everton team that is only kind of a mid-table level side. And like Yannick Vestergaard, they sold to Leicester, was badly missed. Young centre-half replaced him, Mohamed Salisu, looked a bit out of his depth. I just find them very, very hard to see them keeping United's attack at bay. Jadon Sancho will probably come back in here. Edson Cavani, I think, was in training this week. He may come back in. I think United could be shorter. I think United are worth a look in the handicaps here. I think them to win by 2 or more goals would be 6-4. I think that's more than fair.
Okay. And anything on this?
Yeah, I just think Man United are a very interesting side this year, Jer, because I mean it's Ollie's time to shine. This is the time where he will be ultimately judged as a success or failure. This is no longer territory where he needs another year to build a squad. He's got Varane, he's got Sancho, two of the key men that he wanted. Maybe a centre defensive midfielder could have been brought in as well, but this is a year where if United don't challenge for the league in a real form, when I say that I mean 2 to 3 points off the winner, if not winning the league, then it's time off for Ollie at United. So this is, it's a very interesting year. I think it's the best that they've been since Ferguson was in charge. So it's I mean, as a United fan, it's very exciting to look at this this season. Hopefully it'll be a successful one at least.
Here's my theory from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's perspective. Paul Pogba not signing a new deal but staying at the club is actually better for him than Pogba signing a new deal and relaxing into that long-term new deal. That if Pogba is playing for freedom of contract and then the ability to negotiate the full signing on fee from Paris Saint-Germain or Real Madrid or whoever actually has money next year, that he will be one of the best players in the world over the entire season and could be what they need. Sure, the club loses the money on the transfer fee that they would get from him now or in the future, but actually winning the league will catapult them to a new level of success in a new era, and they'll be able to sign anybody they want in the world. And it's only money at this point from Manchester United's perspective. Don't give him the deal that makes him the highest paid player in England, because that ruins the dressing room the same way it did when Alexis Sanchez was there. Mm-hmm. Don't sign it. Keep him dangling. He'll be happy at the end of it. Everybody was a winner, right?
I think that's very fair, because if you look at teams that have handed those players the big contracts, Mesut Ozil being a prime example of that, Aubameyang last year being a prime example of that, again, having a dig at Arsenal here, but that's what happens if you keep Pogba on the leash, if you have him, you know, playing for that move to PSG and not shackling yourself, because if he gets comfortable, then that's a chance for him to down the tools and not play to his level. So I think I'd go along with that.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Right, next one. Wolves versus Spurs, 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Wolves 20%, Spurs 80%. The Nuno Espirito Santos derby. This is going to be very interesting to see exactly what happens, right? Like, a little bit of revenge in the air for everybody. Everybody, you know, oh yeah, it's okay, you're done, it's finished, you've taken this as far as we can go. And then it's like, actually, you know what? I'm actually brilliant manager. I just beat Manchester City. But I don't know, those Wolves players are going to be very interested in sticking one over on the manager. What's going to happen? What are the odds?
Yeah, so Wolves 21-10, the draw 2-1, and Tottenham 7-5. I think Wolves are the best bet of the week here, actually. I think if you just be a bit more conservative, I'd probably back them drawn out bet at 11-8. So I think this could be a low-scoring game. I think just the odds are a bit off here, just based on Spurs' heroics last week. Wolves are actually one of the most impressive teams in defeat last week. They actually comfortably beat Leicester on expected goals. Just unfortunately, their best chances fell to Adama Traore. But Raul Jimenez is back, and he looked decent last week. They have a young player they signed for Barcelona called Trincao, who actually played a bit off the bench for Barcelona and could be decent. And they'll even be even better once Pedro Neto comes back. And I wouldn't buy Spurs just based off last week against a weakened City team. Look through the Spurs team. Davinson Sanchez and Eric Dier, I don't think, are top-level centre-half pairing. Oliver Skip in central midfield, questions to be answered there. Steven Bergwijn and Lucas Moura on the wings. Like, are these top six players? I don't really think so. And if you look at Spurs' price here, they're being priced like a top six team, which I'm not sure they are. So I'd look towards Wolves here.
I'm buying all that, Enda.
Yeah, 100%. I think I had Spurs in the decent category. I think they're a fairly decent side with a good coach, but I don't think they're going to be title challengers by any means. So, I mean, Wolves are an interesting side because Nuno was unlucky without Raul Jimenez last year. So I think their finish last year is a little bit lower than it would have been expected and where they should have probably been. So I'm not too sure about their new manager, what he's going to bring to the table, but if they can get Raul Jimenez firing the way that he was before this, then I think he will be a key player for them.
Yeah, I think that's a big if as well after such a horrific injury. So obviously wish him the very best, but you've got to wait and see exactly if he can rekindle that form. Arsenal against Chelsea at 4:30, our game live on Off the Ball on News Talk on Sunday. It is 14%, Mikel Arteta, 86%, Thomas Tuchel. Now, is there any possibility that this is one of those performances that Arsenal dig out against one of those sides where they're not supposed to, where they can afford to absolutely just sit back and be 100% a counter-attacking team and they can frustrate Chelsea? Is there any chance of that happening, Emmett? What does the money say?
Yeah, so Arsenal 7-2 here, the draw 11-4, and Chelsea 8-11. Chelsea have been shortening up all week after what happened last week with Arsenal. I think they'll probably be the banker for a lot of Sunday accumulators, but I'd just be a little hesitant, especially with Lukaku potentially betting into a new team. Saka should be back for Arsenal. Martin Odegaard might play as well. So I think we should see a better Arsenal than last week. But just in general with Arsenal, kind of, I guess I'll further end as negativity. I think they've taken over from Man United as the laughing stock of the transfer market in Europe. if you look at the last three seasons, 72 million on Nicolas Pepe, 45 million on Thomas Partey, who's 28 and whose stats are starting to decline at Atletico Madrid, spending 50 million on Ben White, who's the sixth best centre half in England, and now this week they're spending 25 million on a backup keeper who, like, didn't impress for a terrible Sheffield United team last season. And it's just like, Arsenal have plenty of needs. Like, is allocating 25 million of your limited resource in a backup keeper, that's smart? Not to me. And just for a bit of balance, they did buy Kieran Tierney, who was a good signing. But if you look at Martin Odegaard, they signed this week, Real Madrid needed to raise money to sign Kylian Mbappe, so they were able to get a good deal for Odegaard for 30 million. They should be doing more of that and setting premiums for English players from English clubs who actually have money.
I don't think there's any sense in the business that they've done. It looks completely scattergun. It looks like they are in crisis and they're responding in a chaotic fashion to it. I mean, I obviously wish all those players the very best of luck, but, like, I don't know. Enda, quickly on this.
No, I just think Arsenal are a joke at this point. I took a lot of stick a couple of years ago on this exact show when I said that Unai Emery was unlucky as a manager with them. I think I've been proven right in the sense that Unai Emery is a good coach with what he's done with Sevilla in recent years since he's left. And Arsenal are a mess. They're a mess. They've now revamped their scouting network again. I think that's three times in the last 5 years they've revamped their scouting network. They have a new technical director in the last 2 years as well, and they just keep changing all the structures within the club, and it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And Aaron Ramsdale is the peak of where this Arsenal mess can get. They're spending 30 million on a double relegated goalkeeper who is the worst in the league last year. That's where they're at the minute. They're a mid-table, maybe even lower, and they are warning sign to teams like Manchester United, to teams like Liverpool, that things can get worse. And if you allow the mess to get too much for you, if you run your club like Arsenal have run it, then this is what happens. You're never too big to fail, and Arsenal are proof of that.
There's obviously some statistical reason for signing Ramsdale in terms of his performances that I don't have access to.
If the statistical reason is behind this, then I don't know where they're getting their statistics from, because Emi Martinez was putting up some of the best stats of all time, of Arsenal keepers, and they sold him for 20 million. He's exactly the type of keeper they need.
Good bit of business.
And Aaron Ramsdale. I mean, it's just a mess. It's a mess of a club.
I think we do all agree on that. And yet we're saying that there's, like, a possibility of some kind of reaction to the game last week. It will be very interesting to see if there's any reaction. And indeed, if they do manage to offload the ridiculous contract that they gave to Aubameyang, that would actually be a good bit of business. We'll see. West Ham against Leicester City, 8 o'clock on Monday. No need for us to talk too much about this. West Ham beat Newcastle last week and looked decent. Leicester beat Wolves last week and looked very good. 29% save for West Ham, 71% for Leicester. These are the games. I thought, Enda, you were completely off the wall when you said there may be five teams hunting for the Premier League title. I do not rate Leicester as title challengers this year. You obviously do. They have to win these games on the road at teams like West Ham if they're going to be viable contenders. Might this be our candidate for the first draw of the new Premier League season? I'm not sure. Emmett?
Yeah, so I think this should be a pretty decent game here. West Ham are 6-4, the draw 23-10, and Leicester 7-4. If you just want to have a look at how expected goals affect the gambling markets, look no further than this game, where before the season started, Leicester would have been kind of a strong 11-8, 7-5 favourite here. But even in winning last week, they've now drifted to underdogs here, where they're 7-4, just purely on an impressive performance on expected goals against Wolves, even though they won. And obviously West Ham played well beating Newcastle. In terms of bet here, I like Said Benrahma to score any time at about 7-2. I think he could be in for a huge season this year, and he got off the mark last week.
Yeah.
And the good thing with backing Benrahma to score is he'll give you plenty of shots. He'll always give you a chance with the amount of shots he takes.
Okay, and a quick word on this and then we'll go.
Yeah, I don't think Leicester are title contenders. I think they're top four contenders. They need to push on from last year. But yeah, West Ham, again, they are the side that you're looking at. Are they going to be able to cope with fans being back? Last week, they were quite good. So I think if Mikel Antonio can stay fit, the main man himself, equal with Paulo Di Canio in West Ham's Premier League goals now. So I think he's going to be a phenomenal player going for them. If he stays fit, West Ham will win this game. I think West Ham will actually win this.
Our near miss section is back. If you have an accumulator bet with Paddy Power and it's let down by an offside goal or a dodgy penalty, take a screenshot of the bet. Make sure you include the bet ID. send it to us on Twitter, WhatsApp or Instagram, and our Dodgy Goal Commission will make a decision on whether or not to give you your full winnings or restore your wager. Send it to us with the hashtag PPNearMiss to enter, and you could get lucky like this guy from last year. All right, lads. It's safe to say I'm feeling very, very sore after this near miss. One slip up in my 21-fold accumulator was Arsenal in the early kickoff. I was due to win about 11 grand from my fiver. From this viewpoint, Eric Peters' handball was a clear penalty and I can't believe it wasn't given by VAR or otherwise. Then, to toy with me further, VAR overruled another penalty and red card for Burnley. This added to Pepe's near misses and Xhaka's ability to gift the opposition a goal. This is a very sore near miss. The gambling gods were seriously toying with me. So now I'm praying to the Dodgy Goals Commission and submitting this one as a request for a payout. Hashtag PP near miss. So you put a fiver on.
Yeah. Fiver on with a crack for a Saturday. Didn't think it would be this close, so it was obviously particularly sore.
How much were you going to win?
It was due to come in at 11,500 euros, so it was 2,200 to 1 shot.
What was your bet? Just talk us through some of the intricacies of this bet, and why do you make it 21? Would you not be grand with an old 5-time accumulator? You would have walked home happy.
It was just something to spice up the Saturday. Just was looking through the Premier League and the European top flight fixtures and just picked teams that I fancied. And to be honest, I didn't think it would be as close as it was. But looking back on the Arsenal match again, it was incredibly close. Even just the VAR decisions not being given. It's particularly sore viewing. And also, the last game to come in was a Dutch First Division one in Utrecht. So if the bet was still on, they won the match with a penalty in the 97th minute, so it would have been an incredible finish. So, obviously very sore viewing.
How sick were you when that one happened?
Oh, so sick. I sent the bet slip into my friend's group chat as well, and they got incredible mileage out of it. So, you know, it was very sore to watch, to be honest. I hadn't gotten over it for a few days, but I suppose it was all a bit of fun in the end.
I'm looking through, because you sent us the screen grab of the bets, and so I recognise Hearts and Sunderland and Rangers and Norwich and Feyenoord. Lask Linz, where are Lask Linz from? I don't even know some of these teams that you've added to your accumulator here.
Yeah, I think Linsker in the Bulgarian division, to be honest, I don't really follow them too much. I like the odds, and I just wanted to follow us to see where it went.
So very smartly, you got onto us and you hashtag PP near miss and you slid into our DMs, as I said, and you've asked the Dodgy Goals Commission to submit this one for a payout. And I think we can do a little bit better than give you your fiver back. It's 11,400 euro. You're a winner, baby. Are you still there, Ryan?
Yeah, that's class. I think I just nearly fell off my chair.
11,400 euro in cash.
Thank you so much.
What are you going to do with the money?
I'll probably give a good bit of it to my family, and hopefully I'll treat my friends to a few pints after when the pub's open. So that's unbelievable. Thank you so much.
Did you have an idea that when we got you on the show that you were going to win, or did you think we were going to give you your fiver back?
Oh, I had no idea what to expect. To be honest, this is crazy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it takes a little minute for everybody to finish. It's 11,400 euros.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the best partnership since Vidic and Ferdinand. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.